have form. Okay. We have quorum. Will any of the alternates who haven't been seated please come forward and sign in now? Okay, the first order of business is welcome back to the Senate. This is our first meeting for this academic year, 2015-16. And I say welcome back to the veteran senators and welcome to the new senators. I've been trying to meet a few of you, and maybe when you bring in your clickers, I'll try to meet you again. But welcome all of you, and I hope we have a very, very successful year. And we're starting out on a good note, so I think it will be a good year. The first item on the agenda is going to be the approval of the agenda. Any amendments, changes? Okay, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. The second item on the agenda is going to be, and we'll take this in two parts, the approval of the Academic Senate meeting minutes dated. We'll start out with May 7th. Okay, so moved. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None? Okay, motion carries. Let's go to the May 14th meeting. Any changes, amendments, additions, subtractions, deletions? Seeing none, then, I ask for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None? Abstentions? None? The agenda, the minutes, approval carries. Item number three. This one is really a personal one for me, and I have worked with today's guest speaker, Michael Cogswell, since he came to Queens College way back in 1991. So for me, it's a pleasure to have him here speaking, and I can tell you this, I don't want to take too long, Michael has put together one of the premier archives, music archives in the United States. And it's all focused on Louis Armstrong. So let's bring Michael up.
Thank you, Manny, for that nice introduction. Good afternoon, everybody. The Louis Armstrong House Museum has been a project here at Queens College for more than 25 years. And I see a lot of familiar faces here, so good to see you. I hope you might learn something new this afternoon. And for those of you that don't know about us, this should be a nice introduction. I think everybody knows Louis Armstrong, one of the greatest musicians, not only of the 20th century, but of any century, not only of the United States, but of any nation. What we do is all about Louis Armstrong, but it's not about so much about Louis Armstrong, the famous musician. Here he is on stage in Ghana before 300,000 people. We interpret Louis Armstrong at home, okay? Here's Louis on his couch in Corona with his Budweiser hat and his shorts and, you know, this is one of my favorite pictures of Louis. Before I talk a little bit about what we do, let's watch a performance. This will be sort of an invocation. This is the earliest surviving film performance of Louis Armstrong, 1933.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next number we're going to swing for you is one of the good old favorites. That's Dinah. Dinah, look out there, boy. Are you ready? Look out. Yeah. Either is that you know, show to me. Dining, the dick got blazing. We'll never sit and gazing to the eyes of dynamite. Baby, every night, one eye, shake my right arm. Cut my dynamite, change your mind. Baba, did you know? Did you want to set the dynamite? I'll have a good night. Oh, baby.
You can see it all in this one clip in 1933, a virtuosic vocalist, a virtuosic trumpet player, a showman. He's got it all, the whole package. In 1943, he married Lucille Wilson, a cotton club dancer, and they bought this house on 107th Street in Corona, Queens. Now, he was already a superstar at that time, so it's a remarkable story that he bought this middle-class home, but he adored the house and lived there for the rest of his life. Here's what it looks like today. And today, it's open as a historic house museum. It's a National Historic Landmark, a New York City landmark. It's administered by Queens College. It's open 6 days a week, 52 weeks per year. Lewis had great ties to the community. Here he is on the front steps of the house with kids from the block. These two boys are brothers, Willie and Johnny Johnson. And Willie's gone, but Johnny still comes back to visit us now and then. Nobody has lived in the house since Lewis and Lucille Armstrong. Everything is exactly preserved, and that's remarkable for a historic house. You don't usually see that in historic houses. Here's the living room. There's a wonderful oil portrait of Lewis by Calvin Bailey. Here's a photo of Lewis standing in front of it. Here's another area of the living room, beautiful oil portrait of Lucille. She was a very handsome woman. She, in fact, broke the color barrier at the Cotton Club, first dark-skinned member of the Cotton Club troupe. And here's Lewis in front of that painting. Many people's favorite room in the house is the kitchen, this blue kitchen, which has been featured in Architectural Digest and New York Times House and Home section and so forth. And there's a bathroom covered with mirrors and gold-plated fixtures, a bathroom worthy of Versailles. And here's Louis Armstrong in that same bathroom. Perhaps the most significant room in the house is Lewis's den upstairs.
Catch with it. Index. I index all the numbers and give them a number. And then my Lucille fixed something I never had in my life before. She gave me a room and made a den out of it. You know what I mean? That really knocked me out because we couldn't afford no den in them early days. We better sleep in that room.
Now you just got a den.
Now I got a den. I can look at all my tapes around the walls and just pick out what I want to hear.
What we just heard was an excerpt from one of Lewis Armstrong's home recorded tapes. discovered in the house were 700 reels of tape. Half of those are dubs of favorite LPs and 78s, but half of them are candid tapes. He would just hit the record button and let it roll. We literally have hundreds of hours of tape of Lewis practicing his trumpet and Lewis playing with the family dog and Lewis eating dinner and Lewis telling dirty jokes and band stories backstage and you name it.
Life is just a bowl of cherries.
Oh,
life is just a bowl of cherries.
Don't be serious. Life's too mysterious.
That's Louis Armstrong practicing Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries. He was about to sing it on TV later that week. We have many, many visitors. We have visitors from all over the world every week. A good chunk of our visitorship is Queens school children. Any day, we probably have two or three school classes coming in from all over New York City. But there's no telling who'll show up. Here's Elvis Costello and T-Bone Burnett. They showed up one day for a tour, and we've had all sorts of celebrities and musicians walk in the front door. There's a beautiful garden attached to the house. We have concerts there in the summertime. Here's the great John Faddis, one of the world's greatest trumpet players, signing autographs for kids after their kids' concert. Here's Dr. Tom Zlobinger, who leads the jazz program at York College. He brings his youth band to play in the Armstrong Garden every summer. That's their culminating concert. The other half of what we do is our research collections, and they're all in the library at Queens College. We have a six-room archival suite. It's right as you enter the library to the left before you go into the rotunda. There are eight collections. The Louis Armstrong collection, that's the treasure trove of material discovered in Lewis's house, the 700 home recorded tapes and 5,000 photographs and 85 scrapbooks and 270 sets of band parts and 120 gold records and awards and on and on and on. That's what started it all, but we've continued to aggressively collect, and we now have eight collections. For example, the Eustahogloff collection at the bottom. He's the largest Armstrong collector in Europe. He passed away 4 years ago. He gave us his stuff. And so we flew over to Stockholm. I spent 5 days going through his house, packing stuff up, 192 cubic feet of material. We put it on a boat, brought it back here to New York, got a federal grant to process it. It's all cataloged and on the shelf. So all together, this is what Manny was saying. This is the world's largest research archives, not only for Louis Armstrong, but for any jazz musician in the world anywhere. Our collection's especially strong in photos. We have more than 17,000 photos. Yes, we have photos of Lewis in tuxedo on stage, but here's Lewis with a bazooka at an army base. I mean, we got all kinds of photos. Here's Lewis and his manager from the late 1920s, Johnny Collins. And he was a real hood. He was a gangster. I mean, I'm not speaking metaphorically. He was a gangster. And it says in the upper right-hand corner, Lewis wrote on here, Louis Armstrong and Johnny Collins, ex-manager, because he really double-crossed Lewis. Lewis's passport from 1964. You open it up, spread it out. You can study all the places he went to. Manuscripts, more than 250 leaves of autobiographical manuscript. Lewis was a prolific diarist, and all these have now been published. They were unpublished when Queens College discovered them. They've all been published now. The manuscript we saw was about Lewis and his local barbershop. Well, we have photos of Lewis in his local barbershop. He was a man of the people. He would walk two blocks up and one block over to Joe's artistic barbershop and wait his turn in line and get his hair cut, exchange news, and so forth. Scrapbooks. There are 85 scrapbooks, and here's a scrapbook page that's filled with a collage that Lewis made. He made many, many collages, and this entire scrapbook is collages. Clippings, here's a very rare news clipping from the 1920s. Here's Lewis in his den with all his tape boxes. Of the 700 tape boxes, more than 500 of them are decorated front and back. He would cut out pictures and clippings, just like we saw a moment ago with the scrapbook, and affix them to the front and back of the tape box. So we knew that Lewis was a vocalist and a trumpet player and a writer and an actor and so forth. We did not know he was a visual artist until Queens College discovered and processed these materials. As I say, more than 500 boxes front and back. Not only did he make all these tapes and decorate the boxes, he made catalogs of what was on every tape. There are three catalogs and two indexes. At the bottom, he writes, "Saul, that's all, no more on this tape." And of course, trumpets. We have six gold-plated trumpets and 14 mouthpieces. We collect new stuff, as I say. Here's a new painting of Louis Armstrong that we liked and acquired. Here's a great letter that was sent to Louis, old Satchmo himself, wherever he is. Okay? And it got there in two stops, right? It's like a letter to Santa Claus, you know? His slippers, his sports coats, his clothes, more and more photos. Here's the only known picture of Louis Armstrong and Quincy Jones, taken by Jack Bradley, and we have the entire Jack Bradley collection. There have been more than 18 books published based on Queens College's collections. Here are some of them on this table, and also about a half a dozen CD box sets based on the materials in this archives. Here's one of the more important recent books, What a Wonderful World by Ricky Riccardi. Ricky, we knew as a researcher and as an author, and we had a national search 5 years ago for an archivist, and Ricky applied for it and got the gig. And so Ricky now works full-time for the museum. And so he is one of probably the foremost Armstrong expert on the planet, and he's in charge of these collections over in the library. Here's Ricky and Bryn with a Louis Armstrong gold record that they just acquired last week. And he teaches classes. Here's a class of visually impaired students, Visions, that was here this summer. And they came and got a special lecture from Ricky. And I'm proud to say that Ricky, this semester, is teaching a graduate seminar in the music of Louis Armstrong in the Aaron Copland School of Music. It's something we've been lobbying for a while. And it is, to our knowledge, the first Louis Armstrong semester-long class on Louis Armstrong's music anywhere. And here's looking over the shoulder of a researcher in the archives, looking at some of Lewis's tape boxes. So that's what we do. The historic house, it's the only house for a jazz musician that's preserved and authentic and fully open to the public. And the research archives is the largest archives in the world for any jazz musician. Either one of those by themselves would be spectacular, but the fact that Queens College is doing both is really, really neat. So come visit us. The museum is open 6 days a week. The research collections are open by appointment. If you come see us, you'll probably see our van, the Satchmobile, which is parked out front, and that's what we use to get back and forth between Queens College and the house. And in 2 years, 3 years, we're going to have a new building across the street. I'm pleased to say we've raised $20 million for an education center across the street from the historic house. The fundraising is complete, and the design is complete. We just got to get a shovel in the ground. That'll happen next year. Our website can tell you all about us. I'd like to thank the Armstrong Foundation. This is the Louis Armstrong Estate. They're one of our major funders that makes this all possible. I lost something here. Let's see. Well, folks, I had a big finale playing the end of What a Wonderful World and showing you great pictures of Louis Armstrong. So you're not going to get to hear What a Wonderful World, but we'll end up with some great pictures from our collection of Louis Armstrong. And come check it out. Thank you. Yeah, I know we have a few minutes for questions. I'd be delighted to answer any questions about Louis, about what we do. Manny.
Given that Louis was such a worldwide figure on the world stage, why did he end up with a house in Queens that was so humble?
It's a great question. The question was, given that Louis was a celebrity and wealthy, how did he end up on 107th Street in Queens? We put these musicians on a pedestal, rightly so, as American cultural icons, but one thing we have to remember, back in their day, they aspired to a middle-class existence. You know, I want a home, I want a house. And so Lewis could get that here in Queens. Many of these musicians, Queens has more jazz musicians per square mile than any place else on the planet. Dizzy Gillespie lived a block away from Lewis, and the Dory Miller houses on 34th Avenue, Cannibal Adderley, Nat Adderley, Clark Terry lived there, Jimmy Heath still lives there, in Southern Queens, Addisley Park, Milt Hinton, Illinois Jacket, Mercer Ellington, Cootie Williams, Count Basie, Lena Horne, Ella Fitzgerald, they all lived in the same neighborhood. Why are they all here in Queens? They aspire to a middle-class existence. They were 20, 30 minutes away from the nightclubs and recording studios in Manhattan. They were next to two major airports. Many of these musicians were from the South. They didn't want to live in an apartment in Harlem. They wanted a house and a backyard and a garage and a driveway and a car, and they could get all that in Queens. Yes? The question was, is there any attempt to digitize the tapes? Yes, we have copied every single minute of every tape. It's taken thousands and thousands of hours, and it was funded by grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Institute for Museum and Library Studies. So everything, every one of the tapes is copied. One more question. Okay, well, thanks again. Thanks for having me.
So everyone can hear it again. Thank you very much, Michael. Okay, the next item in the agenda is announcements, administrative reports, and memorials. Anyone have any of those? Come to the mic, please. Could you please say your name, too? I'm not, for everyone that comes up, say your name and what.
Good afternoon. My name is Tiffany Brown, and I am with NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group. And my announcement is that every semester we do voter registration, and I'm just encouraging all faculty and professors when we come to your class to allow us in, so we can register students to vote. And on Monday is actually National Voter Registration Day, and CUNY will be observing that day, so we'll have a bunch of tables and you'll probably see us around. So I definitely encourage all of the faculty and professors to really encourage your students to register to vote, especially as CUNY students. And the Political Science Club will be having Congressman Crowley on campus, so during free hour in Rosenthal, and NYPIRG will have a table set up outside for students to register to vote as well. So thank you.
Any further announcements? Okay, I have one then for the Senate. Next time we meet in October, we want to institute an electronic package of our agenda, attachments, etc. What we're going to do next week, when you come in, there will be the regular sign-in. You'll get your clicker. There will be another sheet where you're going to sign in. Well, two sheets. One for faculty in alphabetical order and another for students in alphabetical order. Across the top, there'll be a question. Do you want to receive the Academic Senate agendas, attachments, etc. in electronic format? And the answer would be, after you sign your name next to where it's printed, yes or no. The ones that get yes will be getting the material in electronic format. The ones who say no, well, I'm hoping no one says no, but we'll work that out. In addition, we will have, when you come in, extra agendas right here, extra packets. That will all be here in case you want that. I have noticed over the years, sometimes people open up laptops and are looking in their laptop for the agenda. Please continue to do so. But we want to try to go to a totally electronic format. The Executive Committee of the Senate, which is much, much smaller, only 9 people, has voted on it, so we're doing it at that level. The next step will be the entire Senate. And at that time, we'll have right up, oh, budget, uh-oh. The next, we will have the agenda of the Senate here for October, and then we will have whatever we're talking about, for instance, the Graduate Curriculum Committee, and if we're talking about item 7, subparagraph A, we'll bring that up on the screen so that we can have what we're talking about right in front of us. Come prepared next week, 2 signatures, one to sign in and one to decide what you want to do with electronic or paper materials. Any questions? Okay, any further announcements? Oh, sorry, Ron.
I personally would hope that we would still have the paper, the hard copy format. And as you said, Manny, there'll be presentations on the screen of various items that pertain to these meetings. But as you also may know, electronic things occasionally do fail, as they have in this very room in the past. So I think it's important to have a hard copy format available, particularly for those who want it.
Ron, in answer to your question, that's Senator Ron Rothenberg. We, whoever wants, can continue to get the copy in the mail. And as I said, we will have extra copies of all the material the Senate is covering right here. So when you sign in, you could take a paper copy. The electronic, as I said, is available online at any time, and it helps expedite the whole process of getting to you the material in enough time so that you can read it. Some of the problems we've had is that it gets to a person, a student, a faculty member the day before, and we don't want to shortchange you with that. Further announcements? Okay, I see then. Budget presentation, are we in trouble or not in trouble? I want to present William Keller, the Vice President for Finance here at Queens College.
Okay. Some of you have already seen presentation and heard what is happening this year with our budget. This is a difficult presentation because it's not a great year, but to follow that presentation on the Louis Armstrong House is a real challenge. I don't sing as well, and our numbers aren't singing this year. So you'll see in a minute. Okay, just to give you an overview of where we stand, some of you may know that the governor and state legislature, which voted for the budget, passed a budget that held our amount of money even with the prior year. There, in the law that was passed when we started to increase tuition 5 years ago, it said that if the students agreed to pay more and alumni and philanthropy agreed to do more, then the state would maintain its level of funding. As a lawyer, like Dr. Fields, JD, can tell you, anything in the law is an interpretation. And maintenance of effort to the governor's office meant that if they gave us $150 million last year, they'll give us $150 million this year. That ignores the fact of this little thing called inflation, which includes, in our case, the pension costs go up, the healthcare costs go up, steps get paid to members of the faculty and staff. The TAP amount doesn't cover the tuition, which went up, so there's more of that. So there is a huge unfunded part of the budget that CUNY has to absorb. So for this year, it's $51 million, which meant that CUNY has to self-fund that. That's on top of the same issue this past year. So CUNY and the CUNY Budget Office worked with the Chancellor and determined that the senior colleges, that our budgets have to be cut by 3%, which for Queens College, as you can see, is about $3.5 million. We did, however, have a tuition increase of $300, but instead of using that money to cover the gap, that money is being set aside in a lockbox to pay for collective bargaining when, or if, it gets decided this year, a contract gets decided this year, and so there will be money to pay at least part of that. So the $4.6 million, which would be Queens College's share of the tuition increase, is being held to help pay for faculty and staff, most of whom have not gotten a raise for 5 years or 6 years. And that's happening at all the schools. I do have to say that some of you may know I'm a community college transfer. I used to be at Kingsborough. The president and other members of his staff used to be at Hostess. Community colleges this year are doing great. The mayor gave them a ton of money. We get teased when we see our community college friends that, you know, we came to senior college and now the budget crisis has moved with us. Because under Mayor Bloomberg, the community colleges had a budget crisis. Okay, so our current budget for this year is as follows, and let me try to explain it. We get an allocation from CUNY of $120 million. That is made up of the money that we collect through tuition. And there we have a target of $111 million. However, we anticipate this year we'll collect $115. Last year we had a surplus of $2,105,000, meaning at the end of the year we had collected more money in tuition than we had to spend. We had $2 million. That money we get to use this year. So overall, if you add everything up, and if people want to talk after, I can explain this in more detail. We have $125,629,000 to spend. Our salaries for full-time staff is $96-97 million. We spend about $14,600,000 on adjuncts. The estimate is $8.4 million on our part-time staff. And OTPS, which is any non-personnel costs, is about $7,162,000. These numbers, as I said, change every day. We find out we get more money for one thing, we get less money for another. They're bouncing around constantly. But our total expenditure estimate at this point is $126,691,000, which is about $1,062,000 short of our revenue. So we have to find ways to close that gap. And these numbers actually are an improvement over what they were a month ago. We've already started to make reductions in certain, areas, all of which are intended to not affect the quality of the instruction at Queens College. That's our number one purpose in life, and we're doing everything we can to, not cut in those areas. We are regularly talking to some of the other senior colleges. They're making other decisions than we are, but the president has said we are going to try as hard as we can not to affect instruction. One of the things that recently happened is we came very close, but we didn't quite meet our enrollment target for the fall. Our enrollment's up over this past year, but we had hoped that it would be up by about 900 or so students. It was up about 400 or so. So that caused a reduction in our, our tuition revenue. We're hoping that we can have almost the exact same enrollment in the spring. Usually enrollment between the fall and the spring goes down. A few years ago, we made an extra effort and it went up a little bit. We're hoping that it stays there. And a lot of what's happened over the past number of years is it's actually our graduate enrollment that has declined, partly because our major enrollment in graduate school is in the School of Education, and there's been a slowdown in teacher hiring, both in the city and in the surrounding suburbs. So that's an area where we're developing new graduate programs. We're trying new things to increase our graduate enrollment, but it hasn't quite succeeded yet. So we'd like to end this year with at least a $250,000 surplus. So we're about $1,312,000 short. So the way we're planning to try to close the gap is, as I said, we're trying to keep our full-time staff spending as high as possible, especially in the instructional areas. We have taken some reduction in the non-instructional areas, most of which report to me, like buildings and grounds and areas like that. We also are hoping to save money in temporary services, which if you see the budget for temporary services, which again is part-time staff, came in at about $1 million more than this past year. We're trying to push that down to what we spent last year. OTPS spending we've already reduced by about $1 million. You may see, you know, that the lawn's not being cut as quickly as it might in the past. There are obviously some impact that you'll be able to note there, but we're trying to do a lot more with quite a bit less. Adjuncts, we have not reduced. We hope not to. If our spring enrollment is not, you know, where we hope, that may be an area where we may have to do some reduction. But the major thing is we do have a new VP for enrollment management who just started. He used to be the director of CUNY-wide admissions. He's working very hard with Vinay Angrasani and his staff and with others, not only to increase new student enrollment, but also to retain our current students by ensuring that we provide them with, you know, the best possible education that they can get. So we didn't quite make our enrollment target, which was a risk for the fall. We're hoping that we make our target in the spring. Collective bargaining is a potential risk. You know, if we get a contract and the contract is requires us to spend more than the $4.6 million we've set aside or the CUNY has set aside, that could increase costs. Collection rates are always very important. Usually about 97% of the money that's owed in the fall, yeah, we collect. And, I know these by heart. Oh, I'll get another transfer from Kingsborough to help me. Always have issues with collection rates, but we've been doing very well there. The weather is always a risk. Last year and the year before, we had very tough winters. It cost money to bring people in to get the, you know, campus shoveled and to put down salt, whatever. We're hoping that meteorologists who say that because there's a powerful El Nino in the Pacific, that our winter will be more mild, which would help. And then also fuel costs. All the major institutions in the city, if the temperature drops below 15 degrees, have to go from natural gas, which is how we normally heat ourselves, to oil, which we have to pay for. this past year, even with the major decline in the price of oil, we had to spend, you know, some extra money on that. We're hoping this year is mild, as I said. And then also energy savings is something that accrues to our benefit. So when you leave a room, turn out the light, those adds up. And last year and the year before, we saved about $1 million each, which is good for the environment and good for our budget. Some of the opportunities we have to work with the budget is, because of a way that CUNY changed the accounting for the tech fee, where now we only get the tech fee money that has been collected from the students. Last year's tech fee was a little bit lower than had been in prior years. People have been paying, so the collections are up, so we have some extra money in tech fee, and those of you on the tech fee committee will hear a presentation on some ways we hope to spend that. We're working with the faculty to increase online classes. We did work with the CUNY board to pass academic excellence fees, which means some of our best graduate programs will have extra money to spend on starting this spring. And then we hope to increase not only spring enrollment, but also enrollment during the winter and the summer. So that's the story. And I'd be happy to take some questions or meet with student groups. Or I've been speaking with the department chairs and am willing to come and speak to any of the departments about this budget situation. The president feels it's very important to be as transparent as possible about all this. And as a former social studies teacher, I agree that people have to know what's going on. So, any questions? Comments? Okay, yes. Million. I wish it was billion. Yes. Yeah. That and next year there isn't a planned tuition increase. One of the things is we hope that, and Dave actually can speak to this probably is better than I can. We hope that the Assembly and the Senate passed a bill requiring maintenance of effort, as we interpret it, which means they would pick up all of the extra costs every year. It's waiting to be sent to the governor, right? Hasn't been sent to the governor yet. Ignore what you learned in high school history or political science. In New York State, the Assembly or the Senate have to decide to send a bill to the governor. It doesn't just happen. So he hasn't had the opportunity to sign or veto it. So it's sitting there. We think that in the, usually in March, the three men in the room, the Speaker of the Assembly, the Majority Leader of the Senate, and the Governor hash everything out. And we're hoping that then they will hash things out and we'll know what our budget is. We'll also know whether there will be additional tuition increases in the future. Again, the plan would be to keep those very low. And then at that point, hopefully around then or before, we'll have a contract, and next year we'll be peachy keen. But it's politics, so we don't know for sure. Is there anything else I should have said, Dave? Right. The governor can't veto a bill he hasn't gotten yet, so he has not vetoed the bill. The Assembly and the Senate, I think, haven't sent it to him because they don't know if he will veto it or not. Probably think he will. So they want to hold until the three men in the room during March and decide all this then. Yes? Which is 3% of our budget. Right.
And, but I just,
Okay, hold on. All right, the deficit, if you can see this past year, we spent, it says projected because it wasn't finished, our total tax levy allocation was about $127,000,036. Our, this year, our allocation, given our enrollment, is about $125,629. That's where a large chunk of that is. But, you know, it partly gets hidden because our enrollment, you know, even though it didn't go up by as much as we wanted, did go up. So we were able to cover some of that. Yeah. Our expenditures went up. Well, first of all, we've been making changes. You know, we did cut, as I said, close to $1 million out of OTPS. We did cut more money out of PS. I'll explain it to you after. Okay. Yeah, but it's this literally, if I showed this next week, it would be different, because every week we know who's on the payroll, who's off, and that has an impact. Some new hires, but also the steps. You know, because he's promoted, or, you know, another year as a HEO, you get more money another year. So that's part of what they used to cover, and now the state's not.
Bill?
Yeah.
In March, if the CNN rules are that the bill should go forward, the governor, for whatever time, it's too late for any time to be used during this fiscal year.
Right. With the state fiscal year ends the end of March, so it would be for next year. For that bill, but if he vetoes that bill and it doesn't get overridden, because it passed like overwhelmingly. Right. 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 So that's why I'm saying it's all going to come down to negotiations, and, you know, then you get into transportation, healthcare, K-12, higher ed. Luckily, the state's been generating even a bigger surplus than they anticipated. But they're all going to have to decide that this is a priority, or a big priority. Yes?
You mentioned the lockbox, which was funded from tuition hikes in past years. Is that still being funded?
No, actually, this is the first year we're doing it. In the past, our budget was, you know, I mean, last year was a difficult budget year, but it was fine because we got the extra tuition money, and we didn't put any aside to cover collective bargaining. This year, we decided, and the chancellor agreed, and the presidents agreed, and everybody, to put the money aside for collective bargaining. So it was how we decided to use the tuition increase. Last year, our spending actually went up, and that was by using what was called the compact. There was a thing called the compact where, as I said, students would pay a little more, the colleges would raise more money from alumni and foundations, and the state would step up and put in a little more. Yeah. No. No, it will be there. I mean, CUNY's going to have to come up with, you know, well, all you have to do is hear the governor today again said that the raises are going to be up to SUNY and CUNY. And I should emphasize, this whole thing affects SUNY as much as it does us. New York State really has two higher education systems, SUNY and CUNY. And the community colleges are a little different because they're funded by state aid to counties and cities, or New York, it's CUNY, but elsewhere, like Nassau County, Suffolk County, they all have community colleges. So those are different, but the senior colleges in SUNY and CUNY are, you know, on similar funding patterns. No. The only thing that would go into the lockbox this year would be extra tuition, the tuition increase for new students. The regular tuition from a student goes to pay for our expenses for the year. You're welcome. It's confusing. I spend some of my time thinking about this every day, and it's confusing to me. So. Sorry it wasn't as exciting as It's a Wonderful World, but.
Next year.
This is not an announcement. This is a thank you to all the senators. As we start the academic year, all 40 faculty seats are accounted for, and all 20 student seats are accounted for. At the 11th hour, we had an election, and Brenda Sutters Jeffries, right here, was elected as a student representative from ACE. So now, thank you very much, and I hope you keep on showing up at all the future Senate meetings. Next item on the agenda, there are no special motions, committee reports, Graduate Curriculum Committee. Any objections? Seeing none, then, unanimous consent, the motion passes. Second committee report, nominating committee. And you're asking for unanimous consent?
Yes.
Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, the motion carries. This is, just before we end, I want to say, again, we have full attendance at the Senate as far as the roster is concerned. However, our committees are lacking a lot of people. And if you know anyone who's interested in any of the Senate committees, go to the Senate website. There are 13 committees. If you know anyone, please encourage them to go on to one of the committees. Okay. All right. Any objections? None? Thank you very much.